Hi, I'm Francis Lam, and this is Splendid Table Select, our mini podcast where we serve up one interview that's taught us something new, inspired us, or just made us better cooks. Our presenting sponsor is Bob's Red Mill. They're an employee-owned company that for decades has offered organic, gluten-free, stone-ground products, and they're experts at making healthy taste amazing. So has this happened to you? You are drinking a glass of wine, everything's great, you're enjoying it, and suddenly your head hurts. Like someone just punched you in the brain. Well, you are not alone. But what happened? Why do some people never get wine headaches? Nadia Berenstein is a science historian, and she talked to her friend Russ Parsons about the causes of those wine headaches.
You know, for many people, drinking even a glass of red wine can lead to an incredible immediate splitting headache. Some people have argued that it's caused by the sulfites contained in the wine, but you say that's not so. Why do you think sulfites are not to blame?
Well, I'm one of those people who gets red wine headaches. Not with every wine, not every single time, but especially very delicious wines. I'll get a splitting headache, which I've described once as feeling as though a Band-Aid is being pulled off my brain. It is not pleasant. So basically, I think that we tend to assume that because wines have a sulfite warning label on them, contains sulfites, that that must be a dangerous chemical that is the source of our pain. But that's actually not the case. So there's a small percentage of the population, I think maybe 1 in 100 people, who are truly sensitive to sulfites, who are allergic to sulfites, essentially. And when they consume food that contains sulfites, they have basically an allergic reaction. They might break out in a rash. They might have difficulty breathing. And that warning label is essentially for people like that. For the rest of us, I think we see that warning label and we think, oh, this is the source of our pain, right? Sulfites, it's a dangerous chemical. It sounds kind of brimstone-y. But the truth is that most scientists don't think that that's the case. Sulfites have been added to wine in small quantities by winemakers since antiquity. They do numerous things. They keep red wines bright. They keep white wines from browning. And they're also a natural byproduct of fermentation. So it's impossible to make a truly sulfite-free wine. The quantity of sulfites that wine contains generally is much, much less than other sulfite-containing food like dried apricots. So if you don't get headaches from eating dried apricots, you probably shouldn't assume that those are the cause of your headaches.
And actually, white wines are often higher in sulfites than red wines are.
Yes, this is true. More sulfites tend to be added to white wines by winemakers. But again, we're talking about very small quantities that are added.
If it's not sulfites, then what do you think it is?
Well, scientists who have studied this think that it's one of two different kinds of substances. The first are phenolic flavonoids. So these are compounds like tannins, anthocyanins. Basically, they are compounds that are in the skins, the seeds, and the stems of grapes. And they do things like give wine its mouthfeel, its color, contribute to the sort of texture and taste of wine. Really, they're flavor compounds in wine. And in the body, they not only, you know, give us the sort of full mouth experience of a Bordeaux, but they also can do things like cause your brain to release serotonin or produce different kinds of enzymatic reactions in your gut that have been linked to headaches. The second set of compounds are called biogenic amines, and these are chemicals like histamines and tyramines, and they are basically a byproduct of the fermentation process that goes into winemaking, and they've also been linked to headaches.
Why does it seem to happen more with red wines than with white wines, and more with certain red wines than other red wines?
That's a good question. So let's start with the phenolic flavonoids. Essentially, the levels of these compounds in different kinds of wine vary depending on the type of grape and the way that it's produced. So since these compounds are in the skins, red wines have higher levels than white wines. And red wines that are produced in certain ways have higher levels. So, for instance, highly extracted wines, like the very rich and tannic wines of certain regions of Bordeaux, are high in phenolic flavonoids. And those things are the things that make us like them, right? And also may contribute to the suffering that some of us experience afterwards. With biogenic amines, it's a sort of different story. Since these are produced by the microorganisms that cause the wine to ferment, you can actually decrease the level of histamines, for instance, in wines by very closely attending to the production process.
Now that we're kind of starting to understand what's going on with it, are there winemakers who are working to produce wines that will not have these effects?
Yes, I spoke with someone who has been involved in the production of low histamine wines for this story. His name is Sebastiano Romello. He is an Italian wine consultant. And he told me that in his work as a wine consultant, he would go to tastings and he would bring home the bottles of wines that he particularly liked to share with friends and family. His mother started complaining of having really severe headaches and finally went to the doctor, who told her that she was histamine sensitive and that she should no longer drink red wine. Now, Sebastiano loves wine, but he also loves his mother and he couldn't accept this. So he started investigating ways to make wine that has low histamine. So it's actually a much more intensive process than you'd think. He told me that basically it's about controlling the bacteria that are on the grapes and in the production process, in the fermentation process. So you have to be very careful and very controlled about the conditions in the field and also the conditions in the cellar. And he teamed up with a Piedmontese winery called Veglio to produce low histamine wines, which you can, as of recently, get in the United States.
Until this type of winemaking becomes more widespread, are there types of red wines that are safer than others for people who are sensitive? And how do you identify them?
Well, so wines are complicated and so are people, right? So if you're someone who suffers from red wine headaches, it might be difficult to determine whether what exactly the compounds in wine are that you are sensitive to, because there are many potential culprits. So the first step is really just to pay attention and to kind of take note of what you're drinking and try to see if you can find a pattern between the grapes and the aches. Now, if you're someone who thinks that you might be sensitive to phenolic flavonoids, you can try to not drink so much red wine or go towards lighter varieties. Stay away from the Bordeaux and bottles that are meant to age. You might have more success with wines that are less tannic. If you think that you're sensitive to compounds like histamine and tyramine and other biogenic amines, for instance, if you get flushed when you drink a glass of red wine, you may want to pay attention to grapes and production processes. For instance, wines that are produced with malolactic fermentation, which include Chardonnays, tend to have higher concentrations of these compounds.
Since this seems to affect some people but not others, is there a genetic component to this?
Yes, there is. For people who are histamine sensitive, I believe that this has been linked with certain genes. But an important thing to note is that it's not just genes, but environment. So, for instance, the other things that you might be consuming, salami, nuts, dried fruit, all of these things are high in histamines. So it might not just be the red wine that you're drinking. It might be the combination of the red wine and the other high histamine containing foods that you're eating. Another thing is that your sensitivity or your susceptibility to headaches also varies depending upon fluctuations in your personal health and your personal sort of physiological state. So hormonal changes, lack of sleep, not having eaten lunch, all of these things can actually make you more susceptible. It's not just the wine, it's also you. people who are prone to migraines tend to be more sensitive to wines in general and actually to alcoholic beverages. So for those people, that might be something that they might want to discuss with their neurologist or their migraine doctor.
Oh, that's fascinating. Nadia Berenstein, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was our contributor, Russ Parsons, with Nadia Berenstein, who writes about science, technology, and culture in the context of food. Her blog is called Flavor Added. And you can always check out some of our favorite wine recipes at splendidtable.org. You can think about things like white wine braised carrots with fried sage leaves, or mussels with white wine and garlic, and there's plenty more. And while you're there, you can sign up for our e-newsletter, Weeknight Kitchen, which will send you a new weeknight-friendly recipe every Wednesday. Thanks as always to our presenting sponsor, Bob's Red Mill. We're committed to ensuring the highest quality by maintaining a close relationship with their products every step of the way. That relationship starts at the source, by visiting their farmers, ensuring that they offer the best stuff and use the best practices. For more information about all of Bob's Red Mill's products, visit bobsredmill.com. And hey, back on the mothership, the regular Splendid Table show, we have a special episode coming out on October 5th. It's the life of the legendary chef-inviter Edna Lewis. We're so excited about it. Don't miss it. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Francis Lamb.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.